From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. America is, quote, living a nightmare with no end in sight. That's according to retired Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez. He was commander of coalition ground forces in Iraq from June of 2003 to June of 2004. The Lieutenant General's speech on Friday added to the heated debate over the U.S. presence in the region, a debate that includes whether Iran is aiding insurgents in Iraq. Soon we'll speak with NPR foreign correspondent Mike Schuster about Iran, but first we have NPR defense correspondent Guy Raz, who recently got back from a three-week trip to Iraq. Guy, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Farai.
So this was your 10th trip to Iraq. Do you think the U.S. is any closer to achieving its goals?
Well, Farai, the administration's stated goal for Iraq is to establish what they say is a secure, stable, united, self-governing Iraq that will be an ally in the war on terror. From that perspective, I'm not sure whether the goal is anywhere nearer today than where it was 4 years ago.
Let's listen to a little bit of what General Sanchez had to say.
The administration, Congress, and the entire interagency, especially the State Department, must shoulder the responsibility for this catastrophic failure, and the American people must hold them accountable.
When you hear words like that, spending your time based in Washington, going to the Pentagon, then going abroad, how are people in Washington, particularly in the realm of politics and the military, reacting to those kinds of words?
Well, the words have certainly reverberated here in Washington, Farai. But I think there's primarily been a lot of pushback, both from politicians on Capitol Hill and from the Pentagon. The Pentagon essentially implied that Sanchez is dealing with what they described as his own ghosts, that he has been haunted by something. From the administration's perspective, I don't imagine his comments are likely to be taken that seriously, in large part because Sanchez isn't the first retired senior military commander to really lash out about the Iraq strategy, and I suspect he won't be the last.
Let's go a little bit deeper into the trip you just took. You spent time in Iraq with the Air Force and an Army helicopter unit that evacuates wounded troops. Beled is a place where you were actually detained by the U.S. military. How and why did that happen?
I think, Farai, it was more a function of bureaucratic mismanagement than anything else. I was in Iraq ostensibly to look into how U.S. troops are evacuated from the battlefield, so I spent time with various units. One unit I was with was an Army helicopter unit that literally goes to the battlefield sites, picks up the wounded soldiers, and ferries them to the hospital. And one night, it was a particularly nasty evening. You could see tracer fire and RPG flashes all around as the helicopter landed. They picked up an Iraqi soldier who was wounded and loaded him onto the helicopter. We lifted off very quickly back to the hospital at Balad Air Base. I followed the Army medic inside the emergency room. He encouraged me to come. But what happened was once I was inside, an Air Force administrator, I think, panicked, and she took me aside to ask for my identity. And actually, the Air Force, which is in charge of the hospital, had already cleared me to be inside of the hospital. But she simply wasn't convinced. And so she had asked two armed guards to detain me and then to search me. That whole process lasted about 3 hours before I was released and before she did actually locate the paperwork. But I really think it speaks to the kind of bureaucratic mishaps that happen within the Air Force in Iraq a lot. And part of that reason is the Air Force airmen only serve four-month tours in Iraq. And so you have so much turnover. There's a lot of confusion. And this officer in particular had just arrived to Iraq, so she may not have been necessarily familiar with all of the procedures.
In addition, the people who actually detained you were armed contractors, not actual troops.
Right.
How many different types of jobs, what kind of volume of jobs are contractors doing that the U.S. military might have done in the past?
Yeah. You know, Farai, we hear a lot about security contractors like Blackwater and others. But actually, the overwhelming number of contractors in Iraq, we're talking about 180,000 people here now, are in fact low-skilled laborers, and most of them come from third-world countries like Sri Lanka, the Philippines, Pakistan, India. And these are the people who do the laundry and wash the dishes and make the food and do the construction jobs at the U.S. military bases. I spent quite a bit of time with one group of laborers from Sri Lanka. They are paid about $20 a day for a 12-hour shift working 7 days a week. And all of this cheap labor ultimately benefits very large U.S. companies who manage these billion-dollar Pentagon contracts is a kind of outsourcing of the war, if you will.
Finally, Guy, there was a Washington Post journalist killed, someone who was local but who was a staffer. What is the sense that you get of how journalists are or aren't able to do their jobs in Iraq?
It's very difficult, Farai. I think that as a reporter, in my experience, having been embedded with the military, you are dependent on the military to help you see as much of the country as you can. And of course, they will show you the parts of the country that they want to show you and the things they want to show you. That makes it very frustrating. It makes it very frustrating to get a full picture of what's going on in Iraq. But ultimately, it is one of the very few ways to report on Iraq, given the current circumstances. It's almost impossible for even an Iraqi reporter, like this Washington Post correspondent, to go out freely, interview people, survey a scene, and come back safely and write a story. It's very, very tragic.
Guy, thanks so much.
Thank you, Farai.
Guy Raz is NPR's defense correspondent. He spoke to us from our studios in Washington, D.C.